Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
The following radio show is a live recording of the I Survived Real Estate event on August 23rd, 2008. The event brought together realtors, auctioneers, investors, mortgage professionals, economists, data providers, and builders to discuss how we got here, how the respective industries are changing, and how we move forward and prosper together in 2008 and beyond. Proceeds from the event went to the Orange County affiliate of the Susan G. Komen for the Cure. The event would not have been possible without the generous help of the following platinum partners: the San Diego Creative Investment Association and President Bill Tan, the Investors Workshops of Orange County and President Sean Watkins, MVT Productions, the audio video master behind the spectacular live production, White House Catering, who provided superb cuisine and outstanding service for the live event, Fry Wiles, the web development, internet marketing, and creative design firm that created the event site iSurvive2008.com, Proxibid, the online auction platform that aired the entire event online nationwide live, the Nixon Library, Pechanga Resort and Casino, the Chicago Bulls, the Denver Nuggets, and the Cleveland Cavaliers. See iSurvive2008.com for pictures, video, and more details on this historic event, brought to you by the Norris Group.
I'm going to talk about some solutions that I've thought of. Whenever you go through an exuberant time, we end up doing the same things as human beings. There was a gentleman that was an economist that was very well known. His name was Irving Fisher. And in 1929, he was very well respected, and he came out with a statement 3 days before the stock market crash, and he said that it looks like we have reached a permanent plateau for stock prices. In other words, we're going to be staying here forever. 3 days after the crash, he came out and said something like, the only thing that we've gotten rid of is the exuberant people at the top. And then, of course, that didn't turn out to be so right. Every time we have a real estate cycle, we end up with large participation by a large group of people. Most of the people that get in at the end are the least capable of a downturn. They're the ones that got in because there was an emotion that played into the decision. They probably had the least money backing them. And when you look at our home ownership percentage, we got a little over 69% of us to own a home, and we thought that was probably going to be a good thing. We found out that maybe that wasn't supposed to happen. How we got there is we did every financing trick in the world, and we had a price movement that made everybody think real estate would never do what it has done. And so we have this tremendous buildup in percentage of owners, and now it's starting to decline as it naturally has to. This chart shows a vacancy rate that's very consistent all the way back to 85. And all of a sudden, we started climbing up to 2.9% now. This vacancy rate is reflecting the owners that are leaving the ownership ranks, and their homes are starting to go vacant. With all the financing that we've created over the last few years, this number is going to get perhaps significantly higher. And that's one of the things that I think we're going to have to deal with, is that maybe up to 6% of our homes are going to end up being vacant. The reason it's going to end up getting to the 6% vacancy rate, which is double where we are right now, are going to be three factors. One of them has to do with the tightening of loan standards. This was just released August 11th, to the Federal Reserve Banks, and they did a survey of the lenders to see where they were in relationship to tightening their standards. It says about 75% of domestic respondents, up from 60% in the previous survey, indicated they had tightened their lending standards on prime mortgages. Of the 32 respondents that originated non-traditional residential mortgage loans, about 85%, up from 75% in April survey, reported having tightened their lending standards on such loans. What this is going to do is make it harder for people to qualify to purchase, but it's also going to make it a lot more difficult for them to refi what they already have. And so we're going to end up having the vacancy rate grow. We're going to have tightening lending standards, and we're also having to deal with the largest number of foreclosures in our history. I hear sometimes the comments being made that foreclosures perhaps are at their all-time. There's no doubt about it. This is the all-timer. This is the grand poobah of foreclosure numbers. There's never been anything remotely close to these numbers, and this is probably going to continue for a little while. So we have tightening loan standards, and we have this enormous glut of inventory that has to go through the system. So that's what's about to get through the system in 2008. What this glut of foreclosures has caused is this tremendous price erosion. We've been told that this price erosion has been a change in the mix of the homes that have sold. That's kind of where we've gone to allay, I think, our fears about what's really happening. This is a chart of homes that we've bought in the last 45 days. This doesn't just represent the old sale price. This represents the loan balance that was owed to the lender on these properties. Did we have to buy these in bulk? Nope. Bought them one at a time at an auction with 1,000 other houses going at the same time. We bought them right out of the MLS. Now, we're pretty good at what we do, so those prices represent some pretty good deals, but they're not 20% or 25% off of what an as-is purchase would be if you just walked up and took one off the shelf. I want you to take a look at that price hit. On 20 transactions, lenders lost $4.6 million. If you live next door to that Boswick property, how would you like to know that you owe $3.25 and I just paid $84? I guess one of the things I'm worried about is the domino effect of what we really have going on in the market. That median price is reflecting the real numbers. Our prices have descended that much, and we have a lot of people that owe more than their property is worth. I don't know that we know what the reaction of them is going to be, but I think this vacancy chart is going to explode. There's three ways we can solve the vacancy problem. We can take the 6% vacancy, and we can tear the houses down. That would create an artificial housing shortage, and then we could start building again. Okay, I've heard it suggested, and I thought, okay. We can leave it vacant until household formation catches up with the supply. That would probably take about 20 years. That might not be a good solution. So the third one is we can make it possible for investors who want to have rental properties to own them by providing financing. What a concept. All right. Here's four solutions that I really think we need, and it's very important that we get somebody to listen to tonight so these can get implemented and we can get the real estate market to be healthier quicker. They have a 203K loan program that at FHA. It is now only available for owner-occupants. A 203K loan program was available to investors up until about 1996, and then FHA discontinued it. Why did they discontinue it? Because it had done its job. It had solved the foreclosure problem for HUD. They no longer needed investors, and so they said, thanks, and we'll see you later. If you think that's not true, that's on the interview with FHA on the radio show. I asked that exact question, and that is why they got rid of it. FHA doesn't have a ton of foreclosures right now because they were really almost not in the loan business the last 5 or 6 years. But the country needs that loan program to be made available to investors so we can buy and fix these properties in greater quantities than we currently can get financed. Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac need to increase the number of loans they're willing to make to investors. I don't know if they're going to exist after another 45 days, but whatever the arrangement is, they are one of the largest lenders. And this is a policy change that just went into effect August 1st, 2008. For investment property mortgages with Freddie Mac, a borrower may now have one to four properties. Before it was 10. Fannie Mae is probably going to join that and cut their loans down to 4 as well. That is just not enough loans to solve this problem. I heard that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are going to open local offices in California so they can sell their glut of foreclosures easier. Wouldn't a natural target be the investor? And yet at the same time, they're cutting back our financing. their financial situation is very desperate. Together, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, the two biggest U.S. mortgage finance companies, owned a record $6.9 billion of foreclosed homes on March 31st, compared with $8.56 billion held by all 8,500 U.S. commercial banks and savings and loans. They have a ton of inventory, and they're going to have a hard time getting rid of it. Now, there's a segment of loans that's coming up that's going to cause a lot of problems called the option arms. Right now, they only represent 10% of the entire loan portfolio. This Alt-A option loan product only represents 10% of the Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac loans. It represents 50% of their losses. And let's take a look at a reset chart. This is a real important chart. The blue line on the far right, that was the original reset pattern that they expected for the option arms. When you got an option arm loan, you had five choices of payment. A 40-year amortized, a 30-year amortized, a 15-year amortized, an interest-only payment, and you had a teaser rate payment. Teaser rate payment got down to 1%. If you signed up for the teaser rate payment on a $1 million loan and it was 1%, your payment was pretty small, and it could only grow by 7% the next year, and the next year, and the next year. 7.5%, thank you. When that grew, it got added to the principal balance, and it's going to cause these loans to reset earlier. They hit a ceiling. It's either 110, 115, 120, or 125% of the principal original loan balance. And when it kicks in, it resets. And it resets to whatever the note rate is at the time. And it changes the payment dramatically, where you could literally have a doubling of the payment as soon as that occurs. This is a little bit of a problem. And now, in studying this, 90% of the borrowers, guess what payment they chose? The minimum payment. It's one of the reasons why you won't have people walking away from this option arm early. Because, to be honest with you, their payment is at that teaser rate is cheaper than rent. So even if they're buried underwater, they'll sit there and wait until the reset because it's cheaper than any other housing solution they've got. So this reset now is kicking off earlier. That blue pile is now moved to the left, and it starts to peak at the end. At least this is what this chart says. It starts peaking at the end of 09. Now, when you have a reset that causes a problem, these lenders are not foreclosing the second you have one late payment. They're waiting. You got 6 months late payment. They finally do an NOD. You got 4 months foreclosure process approximately in California. Now you have 60 days after that they get to stay before you can kick them out. Whatever reset's going to happen in December of 09 becomes an REO December of 2010. This is a serious pile of properties that are coming our way. The loan balance on this type of loan is $100,000 more than the subprime balance. And one other thing that happens, when the lenders claim their earnings every year, they were able to claim the interest not paid as money received. So you're going to have a lot of lenders have to recalculate their books as to what they really made, because it wasn't what they thought. Now, this one maybe is a little radical, but you know what? It's worked before. Place a moratorium on all due-on-sale clauses. Let anyone willing to take on a payment take over the loan without qualifying. This would do, and I change it to four things. It'd make it possible for investors to buy a lot of properties that would otherwise end up as bank foreclosures. It'd allow realtors and auctioneers to make commissions on properties with no equity but favorable financing. They could get in the middle of the transaction, just like a short sale they do now. The difference is that the buyer wouldn't lose their credit. That's number three. Allow the owner of a zero equity property to move on with their credit intact, able to buy another property immediately. That's a big deal. It also would improve liquidity in the system because we would be reusing an existing loan. We don't lack liquidity. We got $10 million of financing. Move it forward one time, and we've created $10 trillion of new financing. In the 80s, this was the foreclosure growth in the 80s. In the 80s, when I started in 1980, I refinanced my house to become an investor. I borrowed money at 17.5%. My wife actually cried when we signed the loan docs. Those were bad years. This is the price deterioration during those years. It was virtually nil. So you had a tremendous amount of foreclosures. You had a terrible interest rate. and you had virtually no price deterioration, why was that? Time will tell. Well, inflation was almost over, but guess what? 56% of all transactions in 1981 happened because of an assumption of the existing mortgage that was in place in the 70s. That's what saved that market. They didn't have to go get loans that were 17%. They could take over loans that were 8, 9, and 10% because they were in the past. Bring back the simple FHA assumption. Before, we used to send in $45. Our name would take their place on the loan, and we owned the property. I think we need to do that again. The last one is remove HUD's 90-day holding period before we're being able to sell it. This is what we start with as investors. I recognize this because we just fix this. Trust me, we clean them up really nice. That's what we end up with when investors take on an as-is property. This is what the neighborhood gets, a finished product that sells at a high price. If all you have in the marketplace is bank foreclosures that are in as-is condition, you get a very skewed view of what something is worth. When we fix it and it's in top condition, we know that the price is different than that inventory, and sometimes it's different by 35%. And so that supports the neighbor's price. They don't have to compete with the REO inventory. That's a mess. There's our inside. Isn't that, you want to start the bidding right now? Okay. Now, when we do this, it takes about 2 or 3 weeks for us to go from what you saw to what you see now. That's it. A great crew can get this to the finish line in 2 or 3 weeks. With HUD's current policy, it makes me sit there for 8 to 10 weeks after I'm done with this product, and I can't sell it. And why is that? There's an assumption that I'm committing fraud because I'm doing it too quick. There must be something wrong if I sell this property for more than I paid for it. That's very unrealistic because we've just changed the neighborhood and saved them a blight problem. So we're not asking for much. We just want to get, we want to be asking that don't assume we're committing fraud when we take these projects on. Okay? Those are the four solutions that I've come up with. And that's part of what I hope we discuss up here tonight as a panel. And some of the other things that you saw, I was taking notes. There's one other thing I want to mention. The HR 3221 provides $300 billion to help owner-occupant buyers that are in trouble. I think a better solution, or at least an equal solution, would be to provide $300 billion of financing to investors. Somebody put together that pool of mortgages, it would be the safest pool of mortgages they ever saw. And we'd get California real estate back on its feet very quick, and the builders would have something to build again real fast. Thank you very much. First of all, I want to thank everybody that took the time to come tonight. I really appreciate that. I also know that when I do a radio interview with any of you, the 25 minutes is very quick. So to try and cram the subject matter into 10 minutes was an awful lot to ask. I appreciate you giving it the best shot that you could. What I'm going to do is, first of all, I'd like to maybe get some feedback on some of the things that were talked about. Any of the suggestions that you thought could gain traction. And we don't have to go do this in order, but I don't think we're going to solve this problem one house at a time by replacing that 7 or 6% vacancy with a new owner-occupant anytime soon. So I think we're going to have a lot of properties that have to be financed by investors, and I really think the sooner the better. So what about some of the ideas that we brought up? I'd love to get some feedback. And I'd like to also figure out if it's worth doing, how do we implement it?
Bruce, you know I'll always say something if you give me the opportunity.
Okay.
One of your other suggestions, I think you probably did it with tongue in cheek, and that was that maybe we need to bulldoze several houses. And, well, I have the good fortune, or maybe it's not the good fortune, But our company, we travel to just about every major city in the United States selling homes. And when you travel throughout the United States in every major city, I can assure you, we have a lot of homes in those cities that the community would be better off if they were bulldozed. So people don't realize that, but it's a fact. I'm a great believer. I always say, if we'll just tell the truth, it's never a bad idea. Homes that their value to everyone is zero. So if they were off the market and gone, that would be a good thing.
Okay.
You know, I would argue that the issue isn't that your ideas are bad. It's the question is, how do you push the political forces that be in that particular direction? There's two big, I think, myths that have arisen out of this whole thing. The first myth, of course, is this mantra that somehow or other, if you own a house, you're complete, and if you rent, your life is a complete wash. All politicians say homeownership is this, you know, dream, when the fact is I went through college and grad school renting, and I'm still normal, you know, more or less. How do you move beyond that? And, of course, the second thing is, don't forget that it's you investors. This is your fault.
That's right. We've got blame for this.
And how do you overcome that?
Well, you know, what's interesting about the policies that we brought up is every one of them have been in force before. So nothing was new. Everything that I suggested has been there before and did its job, and then it got axed. We just want to say, how about re-implementing what worked before, and so we can get to the future as fast as possible.
As usual, when it comes to your suggestions, it's really difficult to argue with any of them individually because, unfortunately, you do your research, so they all make sense.
Unfortunately?
Well, from an argument standpoint. Yeah, okay. Had a debate when you agree. Yes, I agree with you more. The challenge really, and just to emphasize something that Chris said, when we do our research, we find that the number of properties in foreclosure that are not owner-occupied really hasn't gone up that much, even from when we weren't at historic high levels of foreclosures.
Thank you.
So you're still looking at between 20% and 30% non-owner-occupied properties. And I think that the realtors would tell you that that's pretty typical of you know, second homes and investment properties as a percentage. So, A, the investors really aren't at fault. Everything you said would work, but they all nibble at the margins. The challenge we have as a collective society is that the problem is so big that we have to do this the way we would eat an elephant individually, which is one bite at a time. And I think everything you recommended is a bunch of little bites, which will help. The other two kind of non-traditional things I've heard recently that make sense is there's a lot of involvement from nonprofits right now. Going into some of these distressed areas, you take a look at an organization like Habitat for Humanity.
Yes.
And now instead of going in and starting from scratch and building homes for people who want that first-time home ownership opportunity, they have a chance to get these homes at fire sale prices or almost nothing from the banks and rehab. California, you can't do that. You can't do that in California because that type of housing, Section 8 housing, has to be new construction, can't be rehab, for some of the same problems that you identified with your HUD story. But there's an opportunity for nonprofits to get involved. The other is we are now starting to get inquiries from serious investors, and I don't mean that as a disparagement to anybody here, but these are people coming in with funds worth $500 million, $1 billion, looking to buy pools of notes or pools of properties. And that tells me the market is getting closer to that bottom.
You know what I find distressing about that, since we're being honest here?
You don't have the pool?
I think we could, actually. But I'll tell you what. We got interviewed by Bloomberg News, and ever since then I've been getting called by Wall Street every day. You know what they want to know? They want to know where the bottom is. They think maybe I have a grasp on that. The same people that dreamed up mortgage-backed securities and nearly cost us our system are now putting together hedge funds for $1 billion to take advantage of the very houses they caused to be lost.
Yep.
I don't think I would like that to be a good solution.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.